Hello, everybody, and welcome to 3-Point Perspective, the podcast about illustration, how to do it, how to make a living at it, and how to make an impact in the world with your art. I'm Jake Parker.
I'm Lee White.
And I'm Will Terry. And all three of us are professional illustrators, and we've all been working for the last 25 years. We've worked for just about every major publication and every major publisher. And between us, I think we've got about 50 books, and we've all taught illustration at universities.
Yep. Each week on this podcast, we are going to tackle a different subject related to illustration from three different perspectives. Sometimes we're going to agree. Oftentimes we're going to argue. But every time, you are going to learn something brand new.
All right. So today we are talking about, I like the title that Lee had for this episode, Ship Happens. And what that means is, I thought first it was talking about like shipping artwork or shipping stuff out. But really, what he means here is shipping something, finishing a thing and putting it out and delivering it out into the world. So it's on you today, Lee. Let's hear it. You lead us through the discussion, and I'm curious to see where you take this.
Sure. Me too. I'm also curious about that. a lot of times, Jake and Will and I, when we're talking about to students and talking amongst ourselves, we talk about what's the difference between a professional illustrator and an amateur. And you know, obviously, the art comes up, but there's a lot of other subtle little things that come up. And one of them is this idea that ship happens. And where I got that notion from was from, I listen to a lot of productivity kind of podcasts and shows. And one of them, I'm going to give credit, I think his name's Merlin Mann, if I'm correct. He kind of came up with this idea that when people are successful, one big kind of hallmark of that success is that they actually ship things. And what that means is that they finish things, and then not only do they finish them and it stays at their house, but they finish it and other people get to see it.
Mm.
And so I started thinking.
Seth Godin talked about this too.
Did he really? I haven't heard that one.
In his book, Lynchpin, he talked a lot about shipping and like making sure that you don't just start a project and let it kind of fizzle and then start another one and let it fizzle. Mm-hmm.
Right. I mean, you got to carry it through to that last step. And I started looking at illustration through that lens. And I looked at both you guys through that lens. And I looked at kind of all my heroes through that lens. And what you find is just a constant project-based mentality where the project goes farther than they do. And that means that they have to figure out how to publish it themselves, or they have to figure out who it's going to go to. And I looked at my own career and kind of looked at all the big hallmarks of it. And I'll just kind of walk you down that road real quick. Right when I got out of school, I needed to try to get work. And so I started doing the postcards. You guys did postcards too, right? When you first started out?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So all of a sudden, my marketing plan was I was going to do 6 postcards a year, and it was targeted. I think I went through AdBase or something like that, and I got all the lists. And I had like 600 names on that list. And I was going to do that 6 times a year. And so I just had these huge boxes of postcards that were going to go out. And so I send the first one out, and I get real excited, and then nothing happens. And then I send the second one out and nothing happens. And the third one comes out and nothing happens. But I was just determined to keep shipping. Like, my whole goal wasn't to get work from it. My whole goal was, as long as these things in this box end up in the mailbox and go out, mm-hmm. my goal has been met. I can't control whether somebody calls me or not. And so while I was sending all these things out, I sent them out every other month. And I was going to take a trip to New York. And so I was like, this trip has to be better. I can't just send a postcard. And so I made these custom handmade books with, a custom case. And they were gorgeous. They were really elaborate. They took a long time to make. And I sent out 21 kind of custom-built little portfolio mailers. And I was going to be bringing this big portfolio case to New York, and I wanted to show it. So I sent out these custom little mailers to 21 clients. And out of that 21, they were dream clients too. And out of that 21, I think I had 13 interviews in New York to show, wow. again, this new portfolio that I'd made. So it was just constant making and making and making and making. And I couldn't believe it. And some of those publishers, you know, this was back in 2003, 2004. Mm-hmm. Some of those publishers I'm just now starting to work with. And what I noticed when I went to New York on that trip is the 13 people that I met with, they all had the postcards I had been sending on the wall.
Oh, cool.
In their room. Nice. So they were landing. There was no jobs or anything had happened yet. Nothing had happened. And from my view, you know, in Portland or wherever I was at the time, LA, I think, I was just like, oh, these things are going into the universe and there's nothing happening. But there was all this stuff happening. And then it accumulated with this trip to New York, and I got to solidify all these relationships. And it was just a lot of production time. What I noticed during that time in my life is all of a sudden I had finished college, and then that was when I was making all artwork. It was artwork, artwork all day long at Art Center. And then all of a sudden I'm done and I'm not making artwork anymore. All I'm doing is building these stupid books. And you don't know if it's going to work. And I'm sending stuff to the printers. And looking back on it, all that stuff was the foundation. And I could have easily stopped because I started to think, well, this is an illustration. I'm making stuff to send out. And then, you know, fast forward another 10 years, I'm doing my Kickstarter. You guys have done your Kickstarter. So what do you guys think of this idea? Is that kind of follow suit with what you did? Or I don't want to keep talking the whole time.
Well, I've been to every major publisher in New York and also Chronicle in San Francisco. I've been to their offices. I've sat in there, had meetings. And on the wall of every office I've been to are postcards. Illustration postcards that people have sent. And it's just, one guy was an art director I was talking to, and he said, yeah, I don't know if I'll ever work with these guys or not, but I'm putting up here just to remind me that this is a person that I want to remember. You know, hopefully our schedules will line up or something. But that was a kind of a testament to me of how powerful physical objects are. And I think there's a tendency sometimes to, when we work digital, that we need to have a broad audience and just to get our work out there as much as we can, when really maybe something tangible to a small audience might be just as powerful as something, you know, digital or ethereal to, you know, 100,000 people.
I think you have to, just as I was listening to both of you guys tell these stories, I was thinking like, thinking back to the first time that I ever sent out a postcard or the first time that I ever did a project where there was really no guarantee that there was going to be any payout, any success, you know? And I'm wondering for you guys, do you remember the first time you sent out some sort of an advertisement to try to get freelance illustration work? Did you have the voices telling, you know, saying this is a waste of time, this is a waste of money, this isn't going to amount to anything, and I could be spending this time or money doing something else?
Yeah, I mean, there's no guarantee of anything. That's the weird part. And then the costs always add up to more than you think. Like when I first got the postcards printed, the printing was fairly cheap. I remember, like, I think it was $125 or something for my big box that arrived. And then I had to attach a stamp to all of them. Mm-hmm. And then that was like triple the amount of the postcards themselves, just putting the stamp on them. It's terrifying, I think, putting yourself out there. You know, the Kickstarter was a great example of that. I don't know if you guys experienced it during the Kickstarter, but it's just a real public display. And the same thing with sending the first postcard, like you're talking about, Will. It's you're basically hanging out your shingle and you say, here I am, I'm trying to get pro work, and you know, it's a public failure if it doesn't work.
Right.
And so that's terrifying.
Right. So the voices are who do you think you are? Right?
Yeah.
Is this really the way it's done? I remember my dad, I think I talked about this in the last episode. I can't remember that my dad was even like, what are you going to do? You're going to send out like a postcard?
I don't think you talked to, I think that was just a conversation we were having.
Was it? Okay.
Yeah, so
my dad, you know, when I first got out of school, he's like, so what are your big plans? And I'm like, I'm going to send out these postcards and they're just going to have my name on it and my phone number and my artwork. And he's like, so you're sending those to where? And I'm like, you know, to like magazines and ad agencies and design firms. And he's like, without a cover letter or anything? Like, how do they know what it's for? And I'm like, this is what I was told. So just do it and have faith. And if your work is good enough, then you'll get work. And luckily it worked, you know. I still remember coming home from playing racquetball, and my dad's all excited. And there's a fax from Psychology Today saying, you know, here's a job. I just couldn't believe it.
Right. Yeah, I mean, that's the moment, right, where it all pays off, and you're like, oh my God, I sent these out into the world, and I got a, my first call was from National Geographic.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, to do an editorial, a full-page editorial illustration, and I just couldn't believe the whole thing worked. You know what I mean? Like, all these postcards went out, and I was, went to New York and did the trip, and then it just ends up in this very random thing as the first one. I'd never met this art director before. But it's very powerful. I mean, it gets out in the world, and you just don't. That's what I look at it now. I mean, you guys may, if you've never shipped anything, if you've never advertised, if you've never sent your stuff out, you may be wondering, like, is there going to be a definite payoff? And you just don't know. But the cool thing is, it's always moving. Once it's out in the world, it's like a message in a bottle kind of idea that you don't know who they're going to give it to. Or, I mean, there's this kind of serendipity that I now have faith on because I've done it enough times. That when I send something out, I just know that it's going to land somewhere. And that's mm-hmm. that, at least that's my kind of naive belief.
Well, and one thing for sure, you can guarantee yourself is that you're going to learn things from doing this. You know, the value that you want might not be the value that you actually get, right? I mean, sometimes the value is the failure.
Yeah.
Right.
That kind of segues into what I wanted to go into is what are the things that you learned from constantly sending stuff out, whether it's self-made books or advertisements or even I even take it into the digital realm where not necessarily like posting to Instagram, that's too easy, or Facebook or something like that, but actually mm-hmm. having a formal website, there's a ton of illustrators that never go through that step even too. So what's the process that you guys have learned in doing this over your whole career?
Well, can I make a confession?
Sure.
Right now? I've never shipped out postcards. I've never done that before.
Doesn't have Jake to be just postcards.
I never did that thing because early on in my career, I wasn't trying to get editorial work. I was working in animation. My goal was to get into publishing comics and publishing children's books and things like that. And I actually had an agent that was out there pounding the pavement for me. So I never really did this broad mass mailing. However, very early on in my career, what I did was I made a Missile Mouse comic book at the copy center. I had drawn 24 pages or 26 pages, and I shrunk them down to the right size so I could fit them on an 8.5 by 11 sheet folded in half, and figured out all the math of what drawing goes on which side of the page. And when you're stapling four sheets of paper together, you got to make sure that it's all in order once it's like stapled and folded together. So I was trying to figure out, okay, made a dummy one, and I know, okay, page one needs to go on the back side of this page in the copy machine, and then I have to flip them over this way. It was like a nightmare to figure that out. But I ended up making it, and I had this cool little, it's called an ash can. That's what, I don't know if they still call them that, but back then they're called ash cans, and they're basically self copied almost like zines, but it was a comic book. And so I had that in hand. I had a bunch of copies, and I went to San Diego Comic-Con in 2001, and I went to all my heroes, my art heroes, and I handed them. I said, I made this. You can have it. Would you just look at it and maybe tell me what you think? And one guy in particular, his name is Jeff Smith. He is the illustrator of a comic series called Bone. Huge inspiration to me. And I handed it to him, and he said, oh my gosh, this is so cool. What's your name? I'm Jake Parker. And he's all, oh, I got to take you over to Bob Schreck at DC and show him this. And he's the editor in chief at DC Comics. And so we walk over there, and he's all, look at this guy, look what he's doing. And he ended up introducing me to him and a couple other people. None of those things actually panned out, but it gave me so much confidence in my abilities. And what that led me to was finding a group of comic artists that were sort of at my same level, and we ended up making our own anthology book called Flight that ended up getting published and seen by other people. And it was like the beginning of this journey and really the first step in me realizing my potential as a creator. And it would have never happened had I not actually finished this little book and had something tangible that I could hand to another person and for them to hold and look at and pass on and share with other people.
Well, Jake, you kind of naturally do this. Well, I mean, this whole topic that we're talking about, you naturally seem to fall under the, you know, you made the Finish Not Perfect video, which I think is another kind of branch of this as well. Mm-hmm. And, mm-hmm. you know, I looked at your, Inktober this past year, and you were doing daily drawings, but then you already had the idea to group them all together into a poster, if I'm not mistaken. Is that right?
Right. Yeah, that's right.
He's a shipper.
So my goal.
He's a shipper.
He's a shipper.
My goal with everything, with every piece of art, my goal is for it to have at least three lives. The most lives as it can have. And what I mean is, if I'm doing a sketch, maybe I will do a process video that shows how I do this drawing, and then I can show that on YouTube, or I could show that on Instagram. Here's my process. And then I'll have the finished version, and I could show that as just a piece of artwork I could share. And then I'll scan in that artwork, and I'll put it in a book, which is a collection of my drawings from that year. Or maybe that drawing will also become a print that I could sell. Or maybe that drawing will end up on a set of – I have a set of postcards that I put out, and every couple of years I'll make a new set of postcards with my artwork that I'll just put into – when you order something in my shop, you get a little extra stuff, and maybe it's a postcard or a bookmark or a sticker or something. And so all this artwork just has many lives and as many ways for it to get out and to share it with people. I'll also sell the original artwork sometimes as well. So there's multiple lives, and you shouldn't just let a piece of art just live and die as one version. It should live on, you know, and right. many versions as it can doing things.
It's an interesting idea, because I mean, what you're saying there is basically you found a way, kind of a platform for when you're making something. You're always kind of tinkering with this end place where it's going to end up. And I hadn't really thought about it until now, but I did the same thing with finding art fairs. I've been doing art fairs for about 5 years now, and entered in kind of a clumsy way. But then I sold a bunch of prints, like right when I signed up for the first one. And so I was like, oh my gosh, I've got all these images that were just made for me. I didn't really make them for anything, and I'll turn them into prints. That was my thinking 5 years ago. And those started selling really well at these art fairs. And then, so then it became, well, how am I going to frame the originals? And that became another version of what we're talking about here, is finishing it up and getting it in front of either a buying audience or just people to see it, just getting it out in the world somewhere. And, 5 years later, now, anytime I make an image, I now make it with a standardized framing size, because I know that it's going to go on the wall somewhere, and I want to be able to frame it in a way that doesn't break the bank. And then it goes up on the wall, and it becomes prints and cards as well. So I kind of found a place for all the, I just like making individual images, but I didn't have anywhere for them to go. And until I found this, and then I started kind of building that whole world up. And it took like 5 years of just clumsily going through it, but kind of same idea.
Yeah. I think too, the other important thing that I really learned from the initial comic that I had made, and just going forward, is the value of actually finishing a project and not letting something just trail off forever, never being finished, always trying to find a perfection to it, and ultimately like going for having something tangible to hold in my hands, or something that I could point to and say, I made that, or someone can download it, or if it's a website, having a finished website to put up there, whatever finished is, getting to that point of having it finished. And finished is another word for shipped. You can't ship something that isn't finished and isn't, to some degree of finished. You have to get it to that point before you can hand it over to someone else. So that's the main thing that I learned from that, is the importance of being able to finish a thing and knowing what things to let go of, what things to hold on to, in order for it to look like it's good and finished.
I have a couple questions for you guys.
Yeah.
Have either of you ever started a project, a pretty decent sized project, and then not finished it? And part B of the question is, should you not ship sometimes? Is there a time to not ship or not finish?
If it truly isn't a good product at the end, it should be revised, but it should be shipped. I think you can just continually revise it. I mean, it's got to be good, though. It's an interesting point. Mm-hmm. Is if you're a student level, you don't want to spend $10,000 on printing something that's not ready for it. And so, I guess an argument could be made. I've never not finished anything, and that's the benefit of figuring out who you are. For me, I have no attention span, and so I've developed a way of working that accommodates that speed. And so I tend to be think, oh, I'm going to make a book. And then literally like 3 weeks later, I've got the book. It's done. But if it took me a long time to do artwork, that would be a lot harder for just me personally. I don't know about you guys.
Yeah, I have a handful of projects that are unfinished. One of them was an October project that I started several years ago called, what was it called? Balderben was the name of the character. The Lord Balderben and the Infinicorn of Destiny is what it was. And it was a story I was telling through Inktober day by day. So each day I would draw an image and tell the story in the comments underneath it. And after Inktober, I'd like, oh, I really like this story. I like this character. So I started adding comic pages in between and turning it into an actual book. And then I abandoned that project because I wanted to work on a different project. So I just put that on the back burner and it's still sitting in a folder on my computer, unfinished, waiting for me to come back to it and return to it. And so I think it's okay to not finish a project so long as that isn't like what you habitually do. You know, not that you have 10 unfinished projects and nothing finished, but since Balderben, I've gone on to finish, you know, another 10 projects. So it's not like, this is something that, you know, this is something that I just default to is starting.
You don't want us to confuse
finishing.
You with someone who doesn't finish projects. We get
right.
Well, that gets into some of the obstacles. I want to go back. There's one more thing I forgot about what you can learn from doing projects and finishing projects. Some of them are just logistics kind of based, but you learn about your clients. With my Kickstarter book that I did last year, I don't know if you guys experienced this, but you know, I did the book and designing it. It's part of my background as a graphic designer, so that wasn't very difficult. But you could learn while you're laying this stuff out, like how type works with image and how layout software works and all that stuff. And then anyway, you send it to print, and I printed mine in China. And all of a sudden, I get this email that all the books, I had 3,000 books on a boat, and it's coming this way. And then I just happened to glance down at the weight. And it was like over 2,000 pounds of books. And I was like, oh my God, I don't know how much 3,000 books are. Like, I don't know how much volume that takes up. So then all of a sudden I started getting dread as the book is like on this boat coming over to the mainland. And I actually had to get a storage, storage facility to be able to store these books because I didn't have enough room. And now all of a sudden I appreciate what my publishers go through with doing children's books and all, you know, I'm always used to kind of get mad at the books that get remaindered and they don't, but there's just all these books and they don't know what to do with them either. And so I kind of got a new glimpse into my client's world. And you know, so there's all these practical concerns, like the book I made or the comic that Jake made, like how do bindings work in books? You know, you're gluing stuff and you're cutting yourself and there's, you know, glue kind of getting on everything. And you just kind of appreciate the whole process. It's different than the illustration process.
Oh yeah.
Can I add another thing about not finishing a project?
No.
Yes.
Shut up. I'm gonna do it anyway.
Yeah. So we're getting into obstacles of finishing a project. So sure.
So another project I started was the Draw 100 Somethings, and it was these little robot guys. And the idea behind it was you set sort of a standard design for something, and then you do 100 different iterations of that and see where your creativity can take you. And it's the cool thing about that project is it pushes you creatively in ways that you don't think you could go. You know, you continually have to like find different avenues of inspiration in order to get to your 100 designs. And so for me, it was this little robot. I called them Ready Bots, and they were robots that would help you with whatever. And the first 20 were very broad and they were just, you know, different little designs. But then I realized in order to get to 100, I'm going to have to make very specific designed robots. So there was a vacuum bot and there was, a robot that plays guitar and there was a two-headed robot and stuff like that. Anyways, I ended up finishing 100. I did another 100. I did 200. And that was it. Like nothing else became of it. I didn't turn it into a book. I didn't turn it into print. I didn't do anything. And that's, and it's just these drawings that are sitting there in a file, with nothing to them. And so what I realized was since that project, what's the point of doing it? If it's just, I mean, outside of me getting better drawing and creatively, like it's just sitting there not doing anything for me. And so what I realized, or for anyone else, exactly. And so from that, I learned, okay, begin with some sort of physical object in mind so that you know you're not done until that thing exists. And I've kind of moved on from this project. I might still go back and make a book out of them or a print or something out of them, but because it's such old artwork, I'm not that interested anymore. And had I seen it through to the finish, I could just have another thing to point at and say, this is, you know, it's a portfolio piece. This is something that I'm known for, you know, this tangible thing that I created. So that's one more reason why when you start a project, begin with thinking, what's the finished product going to be, not just doing it for the sake of doing it, which, you know, doing it for the sake of doing it is still a good reason to do it. But I think what we're about is trying to maximize your time and everything that you're about so that you're not just, you're not wasting energy, that everything that you're doing can benefit you in a multitude of ways.
I mean, it highlights in a weird abstract way. It highlights the difference between a fine artist and an illustrator, a commercial artist. I hate using the word commercial mm-hmm. artist because it sounds so kind of money grubbing. because illustration can be fine art as well. But the big difference is in fine art, the creator makes something, and whether anyone else gets something out of that or not, it doesn't matter. The creator, as long as you're happy with your work as a fine artist, you've done your job, even though, you know, it's nice to move forward and do gallery stuff like that. You don't need to. In our job as an illustrator, I think our job is to communicate something to someone else. Here's a story, here's an idea. And I don't feel as satisfied with the work if I don't get to express that to someone else.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So thinking mm-hmm. of the finished product is kind of, it's par for the course for us. We have to think that way a little bit more, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. In backing up a little bit, I was thinking about this subject, I've known a lot of people that are paralyzed at the idea of starting and finishing a project. And I'll often on my YouTube channel or when I was teaching at the university, I would get students and people that would say, you know, like, how do you start something like this? Where do you come up with your ideas? How do you begin? And I think that you have to train yourself to ship. I mean, I think you start small. I remember as a kid hanging out with some of my friends, some of the kids in the neighborhood. And I remember, I'm wondering if you guys had the same experience where we would get an idea, like let's go in the woods and build a fort. You know, someone would have an idea. What should we do today? We got this whole Saturday to do something, you know? And everyone would say, oh, that's a great idea. And then it would be like hanging there, like, that's a great idea, right? And I'm like, well, I've got this wood over here, and I've got like these, I can get my dad's toolbox, and I can meet you guys over there in like a half an hour. And everyone was like, would kind of be like, oh, I didn't know we were really seriously going to do this thing, you know? and I remember that happening so many times, and it was, you know, let's do this activity, let's do that activity, let's build this thing, let's make this project. And I'm always surprised. And I even have some close friends that I don't want to name names, but they would say things like, you know what we should do? We should go skiing tomorrow, you know, or something. And really, they were just blowing smoke. Because when it came down to it and I tried to commit them, they're like, oh, you were serious about that. Yeah, you know. So I'm wondering if you guys have the same thing, because with shipping, you have to decide to do it and start.
Yeah, I want to add that Will is subliminally or subtly jabbing Jake for not going snowboarding with that one.
This is true. This is true.
That's right.
On this bad snow year.
No, you're totally right, Will. And one of my steps to, you know, I've got all this stuff kind of written down. We'll get, like, how do you make stuff that ships? How do you get into that mentality? And one key element for me has been getting used to the idea of clumsy beginnings. And so if you guys take mm-hmm. anything from this podcast, this is what I want you to take away from it, that the beginning, the whole thing in hindsight looks very clear. Like Jake's comic, for example, he's holding his hand. It looks like, I'm going to make a comic. And then the comic just kind of appeared through logical steps. But really, almost every project I've done starts really clumsy. You don't know what the details are. Even making this podcast here that we're talking to you now on, we said, let's make a podcast. Well, how do we save the files? We're three of us. They're sharing a studio. I'm in Portland. Are the mics going to work? How do we piece this whole thing together? I mean, the whole thing is just a big clumsy mess. And then you start answering questions just one by one by one. And the analogy I like to use speaks to what Will's just talking about. My son started building, he said, let's build a fort in the living room. And so it started, we just had one blanket that would just happen to be sitting right there, and it gets draped over a chair, kind of like a tent. But you know, that took a minute and a half, and he wants to build a fort, and this is not the fort that he wants to build. So he starts looking around and rummaging, like, what do I have? So we bring down sleeping bags, and all of a sudden this fort starts to grow. Pretty soon, almost every single thing on that floor was involved in this fort, and it took up the entire room. It had multiple floors in it, at levels. So he had an upstairs and downstairs and a kitchen where he could eat, and he had a little food storage area. And it was impressive, but it didn't start that way. It started just with like, I can grab this thing and I can grab this thing, but with the idea of let's build a fort. And all my projects are that way too. They just start with pulling these random things together. I'm going to make a book, and how many pages is it going to be? I don't know. And how many, is it going to be all color? I don't know. And you just go through and answer those questions. So do you guys feel that clumsiness in the beginning? Like it's almost spinning around in a way?
Because I've always been the kind of person who starts doing something and then realizes later what I should have done, but in the doing, you know, and the cool thing is over time as you age, you do take a more methodical approach. You know, I mean, I think it's natural. The more shipping you do, the more creating you do, the more projects that are successful, the more careful you are. But in the beginning, I think you're in training, and I think you're training yourself and training your brain that not only are you a doer, a starter, a finisher, but that you are capable of doing things that you may not have thought you could ever do. I mean, like, you know, I never saw myself with this little book, the book called Little, of my little fan art characters. I never, like, you know, 5 years ago, that wasn't even on the horizon. And now it's here, and we sell a lot of them at our conventions and, you know, the successful Kickstarter and everything. But it didn't start with that. That wasn't my first project. My first projects were tiny. You know, they were like what you talked about, like sending out postcards. Mm-hmm. So I think you have to teach yourself to put the voices at bay, to shut those voices up and say, you don't know what you're talking about. I've done this before. I've done stuff like this before. I can do this. Mm-hmm. Whereas I have a lot of friends that are just paralyzed, and I think it's because they didn't start with small stuff, and I think they've just told themselves, I can't. It would be very interesting to me to know what's going on inside their brain, because I've heard them talk about doing great things, but they never do it. So I'm curious, like, what does that sound like?
I think too, like for me, when I start something, I have a pretty clear vision of what the finished product is going to be like. I know what I want it to be, even down to like, I'll start working on the thing that probably matters the least, you know? So I'll start working on the logo for the thing when I haven't even made the thing yet, you know? So like the beginning of last year, I wanted to revamp my shop and just build out like a nice new shop. And so I spent like 2 or 3 days just figuring out a logo for my shop and not even like building out like what products I was going to have in the shop and everything. And I was like, this logo has to be so important. And I got hung up on that. And so there is some wheel spinning there, but that's what gets me excited to do this thing is this finished, you know, this finished, what it's going to look like finished when someone rolls up to this project, and what are they going to see? You know, the first thing you're going to see is this logo. So I want to make sure that logo is good and it's exciting to me. And I'm going to do that logo first. In the end, I ended up, you know, making the whole shop and returning back to that logo design and realizing it was horrible. It wasn't anything that I wanted. And so I ended up going with something super simple. Anyways, it reminded me of, Shoe Dog, the book by Phil Knight, the guy who started Nike, and he just wanted to sell a really good shoe, and make the shoe as good as it could be. And then he realized, oh crap, we need to name this company. We need to name the shoe. The shoe should have a logo, you know? And so I think it's important to remember when you're doing this project, you can get excited about all the extra kind of fancy stuff, the shine that goes on the top of it, but don't forget to figure out the meat of it first. I think that's where people lose their way, right? They get too excited about some of the things that don't matter as much and forget to do work on the things that are most important to that project.
Yeah, that's a great point. That's kind of how I do children's books now when I'm writing. You know, if you go take a children's book illustration class that where you're writing and illustrating, you guys will probably get the same advice that I got a long time ago, which is you start with sketches, you dummy up the whole book, and then you clean up the sketches, and then you might even send it out, and you never even actually do a full painting until either it gets picked up or something. And now I've bailed on that whole idea. I do a bunch of kind of rough scribbly sketches, and then I go straight mm-hmm. in and do a finish, even if that finish isn't going to end up in the book. Because mm-hmm. I want to be excited about it. I want to mm-hmm. kind of get into it and say, oh, I can now picture this whole book coming together by just doing these few paintings. And then that fuels the sketches. And then I'll do a couple of sketches. And then I'll be like, oh, I'm going to paint that one. And I'll paint that one. And it kind of just goes back and forth. You know, whatever it takes to keep you motivated. One thing I notice with students is if there's multiple people that are expecting to see something, they tend to deliver a lot more. And so me and David Hone, if you guys know him, illustrator, we ran a project in Portland called, I can't remember how long it was. I think it was a 1 month dummy challenge where you had to start from nothing. And in 4 weeks, you had to deliver a finished children's book dummy with sketches and words. And we didn't say mm-hmm. it had to be finished and beautiful. We just had to finish that though. It had to be a dummy where we can read it. And we were all going to meet at a cafe and read these books. And every single person delivered on that one. And I think it was the peer pressure and everybody was expecting it. And anytime I wasn't working on mine, I'd see David working on his, and I wasn't going to let him finish it without me finishing mine. So right. It's a good technique is to have other people expecting it. You can even tell spouse, you know, your girlfriend, boyfriend, hey, I'm doing this thing and I'm going to get done within 30 days. And say, just hold me to that, you know, and that can be enough maybe.
What if you don't have a spouse or a boyfriend or girlfriend? What do you do?
You could say it on social media. Hey, in 1 month, I'm going to post an image from this book or something like
that's
that.
That's right.
But that's one of the reasons why I like the crowdfunding sites like Kickstarter. I think it's given artists the opportunity to basically make that announcement to the world in a formal way and with a time frame and parameters of the I mean, Kickstarter, when you walk yourself through their website, they kind of have a logical way of, okay, so first you got to have a name for it, you know. Mm-hmm. Second, you got to have a description of what it actually is that you're doing, and so on and so forth. And then it kind of forces you to go through the whole project. But one of the best things that ever happened to me was the fact that my first Kickstarter failed, you know. And I am definitely the guy who likes to, you know, when I get a new hammer, just like crack myself on the head with it to test it out, you know. I mean, that's been the way that I've learned in my life. And it drives my wife crazy because she thinks that you don't have to learn that way. And I'm like, it's just been natural for me, you know. And I can't say I'm in love with the failure, but this something really bugged me about the first one. And I think I talked to you. Did I talk to you about my first one, Jake?
Yeah.
Did we know each other and you uh-huh. gave me some advice?
Why did it fail?
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like, Jake gave me advice and I promptly ignored it, you know, because that's, I have to do it that way, right? So, Jake, you were like, what you ought to do is get a fan page on Facebook and see if you can get 1,000 likes for the thing that you want to do. And if you can't, because people can click like all day for free, right? That's your idea, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I'm sorry. The thing I thought you were just going to keep
your thing is
if you can't get people to like something, 1,000 people to like a thing, you're not going to get 1,000 people to give you $1 for something.
Exactly. And so I my first one was a story app for the iPad, and I ignored the advice that, you know, people don't spend money on apps and things like that. But more than that, I just didn't do my homework. I didn't do the research and really start to gather my audience and really try to find if there was market share. And I also tried to change my style. I made a lot of mistakes, and I actually made a YouTube video on all the mistakes that I made on my Kickstarter, and that was painful. But it was like I needed to process that to move forward and to go, okay, this really hurt. It public failure, right? Like no one wants their Kickstarter to fail. And I could have done the thing that a lot of people do, which is self-fund the last little bit, you know? A lot of people do that.
Yeah, yeah.
But I didn't want to do something that people really didn't want, you know? And I figured, you know, on Kickstarter, you probably have a percentage of people that are supporting it just because, you know, they're like, they feel bad for you and they want to help prop you up, you know? And I was like, well, it won't tap their card if I just don't make this thing, you know? And so I let that one fail. But boy, when I came back for the second time, I did a lot of the things that you had mentioned, did all the homework. I came over to your house and bugged your wife because she's the one who handles a lot of the shipping. I wanted to know. I just had all these questions. I'm like, okay, I'm gonna really make sure this one works. And so I think, man, you've got to start small and have those failures and have, you know, learn lessons along the way in order to get to a point where you can do things that are great. Because I think each one of us has amazing projects within us and we don't even know what they are. That's the cool thing to me is like, I'm thinking now, like what other things am I going to create that aren't even on my radar right now?
Yeah.
You know? And so I would ask the people listening, like, what are the cool things that you have in you that you haven't even coaxed out yet because you haven't been practicing this idea of shipping on a regular basis?
Yeah, that's good.
That's awesome. That's a pretty good wrap up right there for shipping.
I didn't mean to wrap it up.
Well, we got the mailbag if we're going to do that. Go ahead, Jake.
I just, before we tie a little bow on this, I have a 10 item list of how you execute a project from start to finish. Just some points to remember. Do you mind if I just run through these?
No, go through them. That's awesome.
Kind of wraps up what we've been talking about. So step number one, choose wisely. You've got to be interested in this thing. If it's a mild interest, you're not going to have enough excitement to carry you through to the end of this. Because finishing a project, shipping a thing, you've got to be excited about it. You've got to be motivated. And you have to, like Will said, you have to know if this is something someone's going to want in the end. You know, that Kickstarter that he launched was, you know, it had a tepid response. Maybe it wasn't a thing that people exactly wanted. So do a little bit of research for your project first, see if there's interest in it, see if there's enough interest on your level for it. And then the next thing is step number two, resource planning. So figure out how much time it's going to take to make it, figure out how much money it might end up costing you, you know, whether it's supplies or resources that you're going to need, you know, physical, tangible resources. Figure out the key tasks to the project. So there's the creation part, there's the design and putting it together. You know, there's the, if it's a story, there's the world building aspect to it and the character writing and all that, the character developing and the writing of the story, those types of things. Figure out who you're going to need to work with to get this thing done. And so once you've got that all planned, you've got an outline, you know how long it's going to take and how much time you can spend each day working on this and when you can actually deliver it. You know, define that schedule, put that schedule down on a calendar and say, okay, every day I'm going to finish this, every week I'm going to do this. And what I like to do is make a progress chart. So I'll either make a tangible paper one that has a bunch of X's or boxes on it that I can X out, or lately I've been using Google Docs and I'll just make kind of like an Excel spreadsheet and each row is some part of it. So for my comic that I'm working on, there's the layouts, there's the pencils, there's the inks, there's the colors. And every time I do one of those things, I get to turn the box from red to green. And I'm just waiting for that whole thing to be green, you know, because every time I look at it, I get to put a little bit more green on there. So that's number three is make that progress chart or your schedule. Number four, announce it. And this is what Lee was saying. Tell your spouse, tell your significant other, tell social media. The point is announce it because now you're going to be held accountable for it. And just say, this is the thing I'm working on. And, you know, follow me along in the progress of this if you want to. But just know that, you know, in 6 months, I'm going to have this thing ready for you to hold in your hands. And that's just to help you stay accountable to what you're doing. All right, number five, finish not perfect. At every step, just think about how do I get this to a finished point and not get too mired up in trying to, for it to be perfect, because you're going to learn more by finishing a thing and getting it out of your system than by perpetually trying to perfect it. Okay. So even if it's not perfect, but finished, you can always do it better the next time. And actually have that mindset that this isn't going to be the only project you ever do. This is just one in many projects. And that helps you remember to finish a thing. Okay. Number six, as you're going along and doing this, share your progress, tell the story of how you got this idea, what you're working on now, show your work, what you made that week, what inspired you to make that. So share your progress. And what that, the side effect and the side benefit for that is you're going to start building an audience for this project that you're doing. And people are going to see what you're working on and want to follow along and see it when it's finished. Number seven, stay on target. So always keep a vision of the final product in front of you to remind you why you started this journey. Okay. So that's just to make sure you don't get, you don't find yourself off in the weeds working on something that isn't actually going to get you to the goal of finishing this thing. So just keep in mind, you know, if this is a book that you're making, keep in mind what that book actually is and work towards that thing. So stay on target. Number eight, unlock achievements. Okay. So reward yourself every time you finish some aspect of it. You know, what I would like to do is when I finish a certain set of, like, maybe the inking for a chapter, you know, I might treat myself to a book. I like buying art books, you know, or something like that. Take yourself out for a milkshake, whatever it is. Maybe you spend the evening binging on Netflix because you've been spending all the other evenings working on something. So this one evening, you just get to, like, chill, you know. So reward yourself for every time you accomplish something on your path to finishing this thing. Number nine, have fun. Okay. Really, if you're not finding any enjoyment in this and it's just drudgery, then you're probably doing something wrong. That doesn't mean that this project isn't going to be hard, but still you should be having fun. You should be looking for ways to have fun with this project. And then number 10, you can hit eject at any time. You know, if you change, your desires change, you realize the market's changed for this project that you're making, you know, just your interests have gone in a different direction. You used to be into trains and now you're into airplanes and you're working on a train project. You can hit eject at any time. Give yourself the option to be able to pivot and to do something else, because that's really what's going to keep you interested in finishing a thing. Okay. And those are the 10 things.
Done deal.
You guys have anything else to add to that?
I don't have anything to add. I just wish I had those 10 things. I wish I heard those 10 things when I was in school. That would have helped me. I mean, didn't you guys have to figure this out kind of on your own?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. That was difficult. Yeah.
Well, and part of it for me was, I mean, I was really headed towards just freelance. And the idea of creating my own projects was really not even there for me. And I kind of wish that there was more talk about that when I was in school, but I know that is on the radar for a lot of kids today that are in school. And I think that's awesome, because I think ultimately the only person who's going to pay you the most is going to be yourself, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, owning your own IP, owning your own business, owning your own something is so valuable. And I think it's something that we don't encourage enough kids to get into. And so I think this mm-hmm. is a great idea, a great thing to talk about.
All right, cool, guys. Well, I just want to hear how your projects are going, your current projects. I'll let you know my Skyheart update. This is cool, like, that we talked about finishing projects. So this goes right along with it. Skyheart's coming along. I am still working on the coloring, and that's just taking its time. I've figured out a way to color 10 pages at a time, where if there's a scene where it's all taking place in sort of the same color range, I'll open up all 10 files and I'll go in and add the shadows all at the same time. I'll go in and add the highlights, and then I'll go in and add all the little white little glint in all the eyes. And that's really sped my working the working time up on this so that I can knock out, you know, 10 pages in an afternoon, whereas it was taking a long time to go through, finish a page, then go to the next page, finish that page, then go to the next page and repeat that. So, yep, Skyheart is still in progress, but I think 30 pages left to color now, so 36 pages. Yeah, Will, how's that textbook project you're working on?
That one's done. The thing that I'm really excited about now is I'm working with one of my hero illustrators from when I was in school 25 years ago. Mm-hmm. And I can't mention his name because he's not under contract yet, but we are working on a class for SVS. And it's just amazing to be able to work with somebody who I grew up looking at his work, you know, in my mind, a celebrity, and, you know, meeting him and getting to know him, becoming friends, and then saying, hey, will you teach this class? So I can't wait to be able to make that announcement.
Cool. All right, Lee, what about you?
That's awesome. I'm still working on my children's book, just kind of going through it. I've got all the sketches roughed in. And then now it's an exciting week for me because I'm trying to be a better illustrator, of course, all the time, but I've been doing that for a really long time. So those big aha moments don't happen as frequently as they used to. But where I am with writing, actually putting the words on the page, I am at that moment where somebody can tell me something and all of a sudden I'm a much better writer than I was before. And that happened this past week, which is super, super exciting. I'll share it with you. So in picture books and any kind of writing and an illustration too, they always say show, don't tell. Do you guys heard that before?
Right. Yeah.
We're supposed to show. You're supposed to show something, not just tell somebody what happened, but show them what happened, make them feel part of it. So an example of that would be my main character's name is Nico. So show or telling would be like Nico was nervous.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very basic way of writing, but how I write it now is Nico's got a knot in his stomach and is breathing tensed. You know, just a small little shift, but you can feel it so much. And it's just kind of nice to see the text all of a sudden go from being stale to being active. And so I'm learning as a writer, I'm kind of going through the whole manuscript now and trying to make it descriptive, but not using a ton of text. And anyway, it's exciting.
And what's cool too about illustrating something that you're writing is you could show nervousness in the imagery as well. So you could say he's got a knot in his chest, you know, or his knot in his stomach, but then you could also show him like biting his fingernails or, you know, something like that. And you don't even have to mention it in the words, and between pictures and words, it all comes across. That's cool.
Yeah. Super fun.
Well, let's wrap it up. This is the 3-Point Perspective podcast. It's made possible by svslearn.com, where becoming a great illustrator starts. Your hosts have been Will Terry. You can find him at willterry.com. His illustration portfolio is there. And on Instagram, it is at willterryart. He's also an avid YouTuber, so check out his videos on YouTube. Just do a search for Will Terry there. Lee White, who took us on the journey today of this topic. LeeWhiteIllustration.com is his website address. And you can see his work on Instagram at LeeWhiteIllo. And then I'm Jake Parker, and you can find my work at MrJakeParker.com. My Instagram account is at Jake Parker, and I also have videos on YouTube from time to time as well. Well, they're always on YouTube, but I post new ones from time to time. So if you like this episode, please share it around. You can subscribe to it on iTunes, and we would love it if you left a review. We'd love to hear what you think. If you're wanting to join in on the discussion, log on to svslearn.com and go to the forum. And there we've posted this episode in its own thread, and we'd love to hear your thoughts on this discussion there in the forum. Chime in and let us know your thoughts. And thank you so much, everybody. We will see you next time.
Bye-bye.